Well, then I'm going to test on the days of the Mishnah. We did the Mishnah yesterday, actually, but we may as well repeat it now so we can go do it together with the Gemara. Previous Mishnah talked about cases where the Almana is selling the property to raise money for Huxilber or Mizinus or what have you, and we talked about if she undervalues or overvalues it. What about a basin then? Shuma Dayanim, if the Dayanim evaluate the land or the property, whatever it is, and they undervalue it by a sixth, they overvalue it by a sixth, Michron Batel, then their sale is Batel. So a sixth, we said yesterday, given that by Metalpolin, the usual rule of the sixth, here we're talking about Kauka, but even so, if we're going to make a Takana, that there's a limit, then we're going to make the same limit, one sixth. Mefarshim discussed, when it comes, we can understand why if they undervalue it, why it should be Batel, based on it's supposed to be acting on behalf of the Yisoyim. So if they undervalue it, they're making the Yisoyim lose out. Of course it should be Batel. Why should it be Batel? If they overvalued it, they sold it for more than it's worth. So there's three different approaches that Rishonim take on it. One is it's just a matter of reciprocity. The dinim of Aynah, if we're going to be applying the dinim of Aynah over here, Aynah has to be something that will apply in either direction. It applies equally as much to the seller as to the buyer. So if we're going to say that we want to benefit the seller, we want to make sure that the seller, in this case the Yisoyim, isn't ending up losing out, of necessity we have to make it also that it's going to be fair to the buyer as well. Even though Beis Din is not acting as their agent or anything, but still it's a matter of that's how Aynah works. That's one way. A second way is that when somebody buys from Beis Din, and we're going to talk about the various cases, whether they make a public auction or not, or whatever it is, when a person buys from Beis Din, they assume that Beis Din knows what they're doing and they value it fairly. So if they overvalued it and he ended up paying more for it than he's supposed to, then it's true they're not really acting on his behalf, but nevertheless he has a valid claim to say I wouldn't have bought it if I had known. I was trusting Beis Din to do the right thing and they messed up. Therefore it's bottled. That's the second way.
One second. We're saying of the Isha that she has an obligation to make sure that she's selling it not to Italian, she loses her problem. Why do we say that the
because in that case also we're going to talk about the difference between her and the Beis Din. But the point is, when she's selling for Huxilber or what have you, fine. She sells it for more than it's worth. We said actually the extra value goes to the assignment. We said she doesn't keep the extra value herself.
But if she sells it for less,
then it's her problem, right?
So why don't we take the same thing for the buyer?
Because he was the Beis Din handling it.
So what?
Because that's the thing. Beis Din is not doing it for themselves. They're doing. They're supposed to be doing it for the Baal Chayv or the Almana or what have you.
So
that's the difference. Then, just like we said yesterday, there's a difference between a person himself and a shliach.
If they're doing it for the Almana, for the buyer, we don't care. The Beis Din just shouldn't care about the.
But that's the thing. The argument is that the buyer, according to this way of looking at it, the buyer can argue that it's true you're not representing me, you don't have any obligation to look out for my best interest, but I have a right to invalidate the sale and get my money back because I wouldn't have bought it. Because I wouldn't have bought it if I had known that it was misvalued.
Yeah,
the whole reason I bought it for this value is because I trusted Beis Din to do it.
It's a valid argument. When you don't apply it, it shouldn't only apply to the person who goes to Beis Din. You should apply them.
No, because Beis Din you expect to be able to rely on. You don't necessarily expect to be able to rely on the Amana herself or Shlosha Hadyotis or whatever, but you expect to be able to rely on Beis Din. So that's the second way. The third way of looking at it, which the Ramban and a couple of other Rishonim say, is that actually we're not talking b'chlal about a case where Beis Din is selling property to raise money for the Almana or what have you. We're actually talking about a case where you have somebody was owed money by the Yisoyim's father, or by the Yisoyim themselves for that matter, so he's collecting karka. So what Beis Din is doing is they're taking a piece of karka and giving it to him on behalf and giving it to him to satisfy the debt. So it's not a matter of a sale at all. It's a matter of they're supposed to be doing it in order to satisfy the debt. Therefore, if they messed up in the value, so if they overvalued it and gave him less property than he was supposed to for his debt, well then it's true that again they're not really representing him. On the other hand, so they sort of are. I mean, they're supposed to be selling for his purposes in order to pay him back. So if they did, so if they messed up, then no good. Okay, Reb Shimon Gamliel and Michron Kayim. Reb Shimon Gamliel says that even if they overvalued or undervalued it, the sale is still valid because otherwise, what's the extra power of Beis Din? You want to say, you don't want to say, as we'll talk about on Kofam and Beis, the idea that that if Beis Din does something, we don't want to undo it without a very good reason. Avol them also we get us because it's been in. So this is all if they just sold it on the spot. Avol them also we get us because it's been in. But if they wrote out a letter, meaning a document of checking it out, meaning that they do the whole hachraza, they do the whole public announcement and the whole public sale that we talked about in the last couple of days. Afilu mafra shava meir mana b'masayim, then even if they sell a field that's supposed to be worth 100 for 200, a shava masayim mana, or it's supposed to be worth 200 and they sell it for 100, michran kayim, in that case their sale is valid, because then if there was a hachraza, then we assume the person knew what the true value of it is. It was announced publicly for 30 or 60 or whatever it is days. So if the person nevertheless was willing to pay more, or they ended up buying it for less, okay, it's not based on mistake, basically.
You get it
because it literally means a document of checking out.
It's public.
Yeah, because they do a public auction. Actually, Reuven Margolius has an interesting discussion about it in connection with Hilchos Megillah. He says the word Igeres can also be related to a word meaning gathering together. He says that's why the Megillah is called an Igeres, Igeres Aporim Azayis. Because not just it's an Igeres in the sense it's like a letter and we unfold it, etc. It's also something meant to be read in a gathering of people in public. So here also, Igeres Vikertis would be a public gathering to check on the value of it. Okay. What about, so far we have the Almana and we have the Beis Din. What happens the third possibility? If Shliach is selling the field and makes a mistake, do we consider him like an Almana, where we said that there's no leeway for any mistakes at all? What kind of Shliach are we talking about? Rashi says we're talking about a Shliach, just a person appoints a Shliach to sell a field for him. But then you get into the question we said yesterday. We have Nachman had said that any, of course, if you send a shliach, l'takoni shtarticha, I send you to do good for me, not to mess up. So what would even be the question? So Tosfos triumphs it, but Rabbeinu Tam in Tosfos then says that no, we're not talking about a shliach of an individual. We're talking about a shliach of Beis Din. So you have Beis Din themselves selling versus a shliach that Beis Din appointed. But then you could argue maybe he has more power than a regular shliach. A regular shliach, there's no leeway for mistakes at all, like we said by an Amana. Maybe a shliach Beis Din has a little more leeway. Okay. Rava Omer Rav Nachman shliach kedayonim. So Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman that the shliach has the same din as the dayonim. So therefore, we have, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, you have leeway up to a sixth, and according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, even more than that. Rava Omer Rav Nachman. Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna Omer Rav Nachman Talmai. I skipped a line. I didn't. Okay. Rava Amar Rav Nachman Shliach Kedayonin, Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Nisna Amar Rav Nachman Talmana. So Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna says also in the name of Rav Nachman that we treat the Shliach like the Almana. So there's no leeway for any mistake. Or rather, any mistakes, in the case of the Almana, any mistakes go against her credit unless she takes a piece of land that's worth more than the balance she's owed at that point. So by Shliach, it would be the same thing. The sale would be bottled. Okay, Rav Amar Rav Nachman Shliach Kedayonin, because the argument is, Ma Dayonin Lav Lebihu, just like the Dayonim are not acting on behalf of themselves, they're selling it on behalf of the Almana or the Balchayv or what have you, Af Shliach Nami Lav Lebidei. So also a Shliach, whether we're talking Rashi's Shliach, an individual Shliach, or Rabbeinu Tam's Shliach, a Shliach based, either way they're not doing it on their own, they're not doing it for themselves. Therefore, we should give them more leeway. Now, Poki Almana Dalidi does, opposed to the Almana, who's selling for herself. So therefore, maybe we should give her less leeway, because we want to make sure that she's not taking more than she's entitled to. Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna Amar Rav Nachman Kalmana, because you could argue Ma Almana Yechida, just like the Almana when she's selling it is an individual. Shliach Yachid. So also the Shliach is an individual. Lapuga Beis Din, the Rabbim Ninu, as opposed to a Beis Din is a number of people, three or more Dayanim. Now, in the case the Shliach, he's still one person. He himself is still one person. Beis Din told him, go sell the field, but he didn't necessarily consult with them on the actual value to sell it for. So that's the argument. Maybe we don't give him any leeway. So Tosfos just points out, okay, when the almana sells, she's not really selling on her own. Okay, according to the Rambam, she might be, but according to everybody else, she needs the three hediotis. But still, the three hediotis still don't count. They don't have the power of a beis din. So they're still considered effectively like a yachid, or a bunch of yachidim, whatever. The hilchos of shliach kalmana, and the halacha is that the shliach is considered like an almana, so there's no leeway. If he makes any mistake, then no good. The sale canceled. Now the question is, umay shnah mehad etnan. So why is it different than this that we learned, which we learned the Mishnah and Trumas that we learned yesterday? If somebody tells a shliach, go give truma out of my produce. Turn to Das Balabayas, and he should give Truma according to what kind of person he knows the Balabayas is, as we said yesterday, the generous, the average, or the stingy. Bimeni Adei Daitosha Balabayas, turn him a Benyus, Echad Machamishim. If he doesn't know the Balabas is Das, then he gives the average, which is 1/50. Pichas Asara, Hoysev Asara. If he does 10 less or 10 more, so he does 1/40 or 1/60, Truma to Truma, then his Truma is still a Truma. And we don't say, that was a mistake. This particular Balabas is stingy, and you gave 1/40 instead, so therefore that's a mistake, and the thing is canceled. We see that not. So we see that there is a certain leeway. And in fact, that leeway happens to be 1/6, to go from 50 to 60, 1/6. The answer is...
It's 1/6.
1/6. When we say 1/6, usually in most places in halacha, when we talk about fractions, we usually it's usually milabar, meaning that for example when you eat truma b'shogeg, or for example in this week's parasha, when you're poured a hektish, and you pay an extra chomish, the chomish is not 1/5 but 1/4 of the original amount, so that's 1/5 of the total. It was $100, you're redeeming something from Hekdesh worth $100, you're paying $125, so you extra. The 25 is 1/5 of the total payment. Generally, in halacha, that's how fractions work. So here also, when we say 1/6, it goes from 1/5 to 1/6. 1/5 to 1/6, so in this case, 1/50 to 1/60, okay. The answer is, that's different. Hasam, kibin de ikid betorim b'ayin rov, ikid betorim b'ayin yofa. Yes, but the difference is, when it comes to truma, you do have some people give generously, some people give stingily, some people give generously. Amalei l'hochi imad ticha. So therefore, he can say, that's not considered a mistake that I gave different than what you usually give. I evaluated you as being the kind of person who would give this amount. Aval hocha t'usu. Here we're talking about an actual mistake. Meaning, when we say that a shliach has no leeway at all, we mean no leeway within a reasonable figure. If there is something
outside that range,
if there is an acceptable range for which some kind of thing sells, like we talked about yesterday with clothes where they might be 50% off or whatever, then yeah, if he sells it for less or more or whatever, that's not necessarily a mistake per se because it's a reasonable, it's within a reasonable range, but outside of that, no. So when we talk about, for example, the almana with the 101 versus the 100, yes, it's only 1%, but we're talking about this land had a fixed value. It's known that this piece of land has a fixed value of 101, and she went and sold it for 100, or she sold it for 101, but she was only owed 100, et cetera, according to the various permutations that we talked about. So she's similarly here with the shliach. If it's within a reasonable range, then we do allow that anyway.
So it's not
Kalmana. Okay. Yeah, so Tosu. It's mostly like the Almana, yeah. Because the Almana is also the same thing. If there's a fluctuation over there, then you'll allow it. So therefore, Avahacha Ta'usahu, so here it's a blatant toast for him to sell, to undersell or oversell the thing. So therefore, he can argue to the shliach, even whether it's an individual shliach or a shliach based in, you shouldn't have made a mistake. Again, I sent you to make things good for me, not to mess me up. So going back to the machloekus in our Mishnah then, so we have the Tanakhama saying that the Dayanim also have a limit only up to 1/6, and any more than that is bottle. And then we have Rishim and Gamliel saying that what happened to Koyach based in Yafin. Who's the halacha like? Amr of Hunabachinin, Amr of Nachman, halacha, Ketivei Chachamim. The halacha is like the Chachamim, so 1/6. Well, Tosus says it's not actually so straightforward that There is a different Gemara in Kiddushin where Reb Nachman uses Reb Shimon Gamliel's opinion as a proof to a din that he says over there. Here he's saying the halacha is like a chamim. Tosfos discusses that there's a difference between whether you're actually saying I'm buying according to the value that the chachamim place that the dayanim placed on it versus not. Usually, if he's not saying I'm specifically relying on what the dayanim said, then you have the usual rule, ain't I know like hakoyis that I know it doesn't apply. Question is,
the sixth applies
to Kauka here by special Takanas Chachamim,
right.
But what Tosfos is saying is it's only if the person is saying I'm relying on the value that Beis Din put on it, so then if it turns out that it was more than or less than 1/6, then we're saying it's bottle. Ordinarily we would say, whatever you bought it for, you bought it. But if you're specifically saying niflig b'shulah de beidina, let's divide it according to how Beis Din calculated the value, then you have the right that if it was more than a six, that if it was more than a six, go off those bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that implies that you expected the dayanim to know what they're doing. Thank you. Okay, so Reb Nachman is saying halacha kediv chachamim. The question is, why doesn't Reb Nachman hold of this consideration of makayach Beis Din Yofa, that if Beis Din does something, we shouldn't just undo it willy-nilly? When Yisoyimim come to divide their father's property, Beis Din amidin lahem apotrofos, Beis Din sets up an apotrofos, a guardian, a trustee for them, or boredin lahem chelik yafa, and the apotrofos chooses for each yafim a good portion based on. And so Rashi says that each of them chooses. Wow. What's the occasion? Okay. So what do we mean over here when we say an apotropos? So Rashi says it means each yoftim gets his own apotropos, and that apotropos is responsible for making sure that his particular yoftim's best interests are kept in mind. So each one of them chooses according to his judgment what's best for that particular yoftim. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos discusses at some length over here that it might mean actually that they there's one apotropos on behalf of all of them. And what do we mean that bur in lein chelik yafa actually means you make a gadol to determine who gets what?
Really?
Yeah.
You're saying cannot choose their own apotropos?
So Tosfos talks about if they're chanim, then how are they going to know what to choose? So one way of looking at it is we're talking about if there's some yisoyimim who are minors and others who are gdolim, so then you need to set up an apotropos to manage the affairs of the chanim. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so uberim and chelik yafa, they pick out a good thing for each yosim, and he continues, ikdilu yecholim limchos. When they get older, if they decide they would have wanted, we don't like the way that it was divided up, then they can protest and have it undone. That was what Shmuel says. But Reb Nachman di Deyoma, whereas Reb Nachman himself says, I disagree with Shmuel on that last detail. Higdilu en yuchadu limchos. No, when they get older, they can't protest. Because imkein ma'achayach Beis Din Yofa. Because otherwise, what good is what Beis Din did? Okay, here it was with apotropsin, but they're doing it under the supervision of Beis Din. The general rule in Shas, we say Beis Din abiyin shay yisaymin. That Beis Din is considered like the father of the yisaymin. So we see Reb Nachman does hold of this ma'achayach Beis Din Yofa factor. So why is he saying in our Mishnah that halacha should be like the chachamim who don't hold of that factor? The answer is le'kasha ha'deto ha'deloito. Okay, but there's a difference. One case is talking about where Beis Din actually made a mistake. One is talking about where the apotropos didn't make a mistake. So the case when we're talking about over here, so if apotropos made a mistake, then Reb Nachman would say that they can protest. We don't care about makayach Beis Din Yofa. Or if the Beis Din made a mistake, that's what our Mishnah is saying. That's what the Tanakhama is saying in our Mishnah. That the Beis Din made a mistake, more than 1/6. We don't care makayach Beis Din Yofa. We don't care about zilus of the Beis Din. That's going to be people are going to think less of Beis Din. No, we allow them to undo it. As opposed to if no mistake was made, that's what Reb Nachman is saying, that they can't protest. Well, the question is, what are they protesting about? Answer is beruchos. They might protest. Yes, we got as far as the actual monetary value, we got an equal pool. Each of us got an equal portion. We're good on that. The problem is, we would have liked to get our portion on a different. We would have liked to get a different side. Why? Because
on a different side.
Rashi says, for example, imagine that one of these Yisraelim inherited property from his mother, where that property originally belonged to his mother's father. And he inherited it through his mother. He had the father over here who died, and must be Yisraelim had two wives. So one or more children from that wife inherited property, let's say over here. So now they're saying when you divided up the estate, you had a whole field over here, which you divided up into four parts, let's say one for each kid, and you gave me my part over here. Very nice. It is worth exactly the same as the part over here and over here and over here. But I would have preferred if you gave me my part over here, because then it would be contiguous with the other field that I already own. So therefore, you would have thought they could protest against that. They could say, you know what, let's undo what the Apotropsin did and redo it in order that it should work out that way. That would be the chiddush that no, because there wasn't an actual mistake in the valuation, then just leave well enough alone.
It's a preference.
Yeah, basically. So you don't have a contradiction within what Rav Nachman is saying.
No.
He is saying I don't hold of Makayach based in Yofa. When is he saying when he says over here he dilu and yuchol limchos? He means we do look at koyach bistin when it's not a matter of an actual toast, but just a difference of opinion.
When it is a toast, then
we undo it. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So going back to the question, who's the halacha like, Rebbe or Reb Shimon Gamliel? He also of Dimi Omar. When Reb Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he said, "Ma'aseh v'aseh Rebbe k'divacham." It happened once that Rebbe acted in accordance with the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that the Dayanim made a mistake of more than 1/6, and he said the sale was canceled. Amar l'fana Parta b'nei Shalor Rav Elazar ben Parta ben b'nei Shalor Parta Hagadol. So Parta, the son of Rav Elazar ben Parta, the grandson of the Parta Hagadol. So most Mepharshim say it. Tosfos says actually, Tosfos says that doesn't mean we're not talking about three Parutas. When we say Parutah, the son of Rav Elazar ben Parutah, the Rav Elazar ben Parutah, his father was the Rav Parutah HaGadol. So there's two Parutahs in the family: the grandfather who was called Rav Parutah HaGadol, and the grandson was also called Parutah. It's by the way, I mean, among Sfardim, they name after the living. It seems from various places in Shas, but that was the common minhag in those days. You have many times they have grandsons named for their grandfathers. You have the way in the family of the Nasiim, the names first Shimon and Gamliel, and then Yehuda and Gamliel go back and forth. No, you don't name after the father for various reasons. Among them, Sfardim don't name after their fathers. What they do is they use their father's name as a middle name. So if you have somebody named Moshe and his father's name is Yaakov, they'll call themselves Moshe Yaakov.
Ah, there's another Moshe. Famous son of Moshe. Yes,
that's what it is. Yeah. So they, yeah.
His last name is his father.
Right.
So they use it as
a middle name, but not. Yeah. But yeah. Okay. So anyway, so Parcha tells you that the Imken Makayach based in Yoffa. If you're going to do like the Chachamim, and you have Reb Shimon Gamliel's argument from our Mishnah, Makayach based in Yoffa. What you have to give based in power. Okay.
Either you give it all the way.
In other words, once they did it, you shouldn't undo what based in did without a very good reason. The Rebbe at Hamaisa, and in fact, the Rebbe undid the Psak Din and said, fine, well, in that case, then I'll leave well enough alone. That was one version. Reb Dimi Masni Hachi, that was how Reb Dimi learned it. Reb Safra Masni Hachi, Reb Safra learned the story a little differently. Maisa Ubikish Rebbe Lassus Gedev Acham. It wasn't that Rebbe actually passed him like a Chacham. He was going to. And on the front of Parutah B'nai Shorab Elazar and Parutah B'nai Shorab Parutah Agadol, and Ken Makayach Besi Yafa. And also Rebbe at Hamaisa. So Rebbe didn't actually paskin like the way he was planning to. So according to Reb Dimi's version, Rebbe actually paskin, and then he had to undo it. According to Reb Safra's version, he didn't do it to begin with. He was going to do it. So the question is, Lema Balkambe. So should we say then that Reb Dimi and Reb Safra are arguing about the following point? Mar Sava Tabid Va Mishnah Chayzer. One of them holds that if you make a mistake in something that it says in a Mishnah, and if a Dayan makes a mistake and forget the halacha that it says explicitly in a Mishnah, then we actually undo the din Torah. We had this a couple of weeks ago. So according to Rabbi Dimi's version, what would it be? Rabbi was Toya Bidvar Mishnah, because we have the Chachamim versus Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and generally the halacha is like the Chachamim. So that's effectively Toya Bidvar Mishnah. And therefore, Rabbi Dimi says that Rabbi actually undid the Psak Din. He went and undid it and gave that and said, let's start over again and then give back the property or whatever to whoever, like the Chachamim. Whereas Rabbi Safra would say, that if you tell your Bidvar Mishnah, you don't undo the Psak Din. So then, in some cases, the Dayan will be responsible to reimburse the party who was improperly taken away from. In some cases, not. Depends whether he was a Mumchal or Rabim or not, whether he was a Smich or not, basically. But according to Rabbi Safra, therefore, if Rebbe had actually passed in that way, he couldn't have undone it. It has to be, that's why Rabbi Safra would be saying that he would be forced to do it. The answer is no. The Kol Amatar B'Dvar Mishnah Chayzer. No, you could say everybody agrees that if you make a mistake in Advar Mishnah, then you undo the Psak Din. As opposed to which we talked about before, and Rashi mentions over here that if the Dayan made a mistake, the Shikul Adas in something that where there's svaras on both sides, but there's more reason to go to one side and instead the Dayan pick the other side, then we say the Psak remains the Psak, and in certain cases the Dayan will have to reimburse the other party.
Only Shikul Adas,
but not Dvar Mishnah. So the Achronim talk about, for example, I mean, pretty much nowadays you only have Torah B'Dvar Mishnah because everything is written down. You have very few, you have very little that left the Shikul Adas anymore. But okay, anyway. So what would be the Machlokas? It's not really a Machlokas in the Din. It's just what actually happened. Omar Savahachi Avimaisa, Omar Savahachi Avimaisa. So such a Dimi's version was that he actually passed in and then had to undo it, and Rav Safra's is that he was thinking to do it. So no actual real fundamental machloikus.
That's Shikul Adas?
No, not Shikul Adas. Rav Dimi and Rav Safra are just arguing how did the story happen without it having a relevant halacha.
They had an incline for one way or for another way.
I don't know. No, nobody had an incline. Rav Dimi had heard that this story, which happened more than 100 years before his time, happened one way, and Rav Safra heard it a different way. Amar Rav Yosef, Amalta Dizvina, when the Almana sells a field, Achrayus Ayasmi, we had this the other day, the Achrayus goes on the Yisayim. So suppose, for example, so she sold a field to raise money for Mazonas, or Ksuba, or what have you, and it turned out, let's say, that the field was stolen from somebody else, or there was a shibud to a balchayv or whatever, and that person goes and takes it. Achrayus hayasmi. Then the achrayus, the fact that they have to reimburse the fact that you have to reimburse the buyer is on the assignment. Well, based in dezabin achrayus hayasmi. And similarly, if based in sell the field and it turns out that it was stolen or what have you, then also the achrayus falls on the assignment because they did it on behalf of the assignment. Isn't that obvious? If they're doing it on behalf of the Yisayim, of course the Achrayus is on them. The answer is Amona, lo yitzrichale, you're right. Rabbi Yosef didn't really have to tell us that that's din by an Amona, because that's obvious. Ki yitzrichale be dinah. The chiddush is he had to tell us that din applies if based in sells. Mao detema, because you might have thought, kol dezabin mi be dinah, when a person buys from based in, adayta lo meipak le kolahu dezabin. He buys it normally based in sell with hachrozo, with a public announcement, as we talked about before. So that you would think then, Rashi says, that the buyer would figure as follows. It's one thing if the almana is selling and she may be selling in a private transaction, so later on, you know, the person whose field it really is, let's say who it was stolen from, didn't know about it, and therefore now they're coming and then claiming it. With based in, where there's a whole hullabaloo about it, where there's a whole public auction and everything, you would think everybody knows about it. So therefore, you would think that therefore he's willing to buy, not Bachrayus. He's thinking, in other words, what do I need to pay extra for that? What do I need to pay extra for property insurance? For title insurance, basically. Given that based in is selling it publicly, if there is any problem, it'll surely come up during that 30 or 60 days that they're announcing it. Kamash Malon, that would be the chiddush that we don't say that even if Beis Din sells it, even though yes, it was a public matter, but if it turns out afterwards that it was stolen or what have you, there still has to be achrayus, and that achrayus has to be on the assignment. slightly different version that some Rishonim say that when we say you'll make up like kola is that you might have a person wants to buy a field from Beis Din, even though he may have reason to think, forget about what we were saying over here, that there's a hachraza. When a person would say, I want to be able to when Beis Din is offering a field for sale, I want to have the chance to buy it, so that way everybody knows that I'm well off, and I can buy things on behalf of the Yisraelim, and so on and so forth, and that way people will trust me more. So you would think, maybe the person is willing to take that risk. I'm willing to even buy it without a chrayus, as long as I have a chance to buy a field that's being sold by Beis Din and therefore improve my standing in the community. And the chiddush is, we don't say that. We still say that he expects a chrayus. What? Yes. Okay. And that flaw, by the way, talks a little bit about over here. I mean, if we're talking about if the almana is selling it from Mizonis, Rashi mentioned in Amar Aleph that an example we're talking about over here is the almana is selling from Mizonis, then there is no auction anyway. We learned before, and we're going to learn later on this Amud, that when you're selling from Mizonis, you don't need achraza because you need to sell as soon as possible. So what achraza? What color? He discusses a little bit the ins and outs of it. He says that maybe for one thing he says maybe when Rashi mentions that the Almana is selling it from Mizonis, that's only according to the Hava Amina, but later on we're saying that instead it's being sold for the Ksuba or some other purpose for which there does need to be Achraza. He still is kind of Sarach here, and like it's still a little hard to understand. Okay, then the Mishnah had said Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we makoyach based in Yafa, we want to have that once based in does something, we shouldn't undo it without reason. So even if they sell a field for half the expected price or twice the expected price, what's done is done. Okay, for Adkama, how far does that go? I mean, do we give them infinite leeway? Do we give them infinite leeway? Amrav Hunna Bar Yehuda, Amrav Sheshes, no, Adkama, only up to half. So yes, that's the examples in our mission. They sold for half the price they were supposed to get for it, or double the price, then good. But let's say it was a field worth 100 and they sold it for 250. That already, michel and bottle, that already the buyer has the right to undo it even according to the trimming on the deal. There comes a point we can't say makoy based in Yafa anymore. Tanya Nami.
Gross.
That would basically be gross negligence. Tanya Nami. Hachi Amrav Shimon Gamliel based in Shemachor Shavon Masayim of Mana Shavon Mana Masayim Michran Kayim. That if they sell 200 for a field worth 200 for 100 or a field worth 100 for 200 Michran Kayim, then their sale is valid, which implies only up to that, no more. Amrav Amayim of Shmeidir of Yosef based in Shemachor B'loy Hachroza. If based in sells a property without making the public announcement that we've been talking about. Nasu Kamishato with Vah Mishnah, then it's considered the equivalent of making a mistake and forgetting a halacha that says in a Mishnah. And therefore the sale is undone.
Even if it's you have sent off the value.
Wait, we're gonna get to that. Let's start with what we have and then work our way through the circuit. First of all, what do you mean nasu? What do you mean we consider it as if they made a mistake and forgot something from Mishnah? Vadato, it is a mistake. There is an actual Mishnah that says, that you have to do that. We learn in a Mishnah in Echon, Shumah Yisraelim Shloshim Yoyim, Shumah Hekdesh Shloshim Yoyim, that when you're evaluating property of Yisraelim to sell it, you have to make announcements for 30 days. The Shumah Hekdesh Shloshim Yoyim, when you do it for Hekdesh, you have to do it for 60 days. You make an announcement every morning and every evening. And the Mishnah goes on.
Not an appraisal.
You make an announcement. You say every morning and every evening. You say the Mishnah mentions over there all the details. You say here's the boundaries of it. So far we've got, you know, I have 100, do I hear 110, you know, like I do when they're selling Aliyahs or whatever, you know. So for Yisraelim, you have to do it for 30 days. For Hekdesh, you have to do it for 60 days, every morning and every evening. So there's an actual Mishnah that says so. So of course if they don't do that, they've forgotten a Mishnah, and therefore it's totally about Mishnah Chazir. Why, by the way, is it half the time for Yisraelim as for Hekdesh? So they give an explanation because... What? No, not that. The Yisraelim may well need the money, but no, there's another reason. It's because... Let me see, how did it go? with the assignment. So what's going to happen eventually is you're going to have the building is going to reach a certain plateau. There's going to be at some point people are going to stop bidding any higher. At that point, somebody may say, you know what? Well, the high bidders may even change their mind. And whatever, a person may like to come in there on the 30th day, you know, the high bidders will say, you know what, forget about it, I can't bother, and then somebody can swoop in and buy it at a low price. So therefore, better we should just do it for no more than 30 days in order not to give that kind of thing a chance to happen. With Hekdesh, the din is, the Gemara explains to an Erchid, that if somebody bid on property of Hekdesh and then wants to retract his bid, unless it ends up selling for at least his bid or higher, we will make him pay the difference. So if he bid 100, for example, and then in the end he retracts his bid and we wind up having to sell it to somebody who only offered 90, we will make that guy pay the extra 10. So we might as well do Hekdesh for 60 days because there's no chance that Hekdesh is going to lose out. So what are you saying that nasu, that it's considered as if they made a Torah Sperdam Mishnah? It is a Torah Sperdam Mishnah. The answer is, imahi, if you only had that Mishnah, and have aminan in the shliach, then you would say that applies when you have a shliach selling it, that you have to have the official achrazah for 30 or 60 days. How about Beis Din? You might think maybe the Beis Din doesn't have to. Maybe they can just bidiyev, they can just sell it right on the spot. So mashmalan, that's the chiddush that no, if they do, okay, we can't consider that it's blatantly taught for Dvar Mishnah, because they might have understood the Mishnah to be talking about a shliach. Nevertheless, we consider it as if they were taught for Dvar Mishnah, and we say the whole thing is undone and we start all over. We say in our Mishnah that if the Dayanim sold the field for an extra sixth or for a sixth over the fair market value or a sixth under, then the sale is bottled, which implies Hashava Bashava Mikran Kayam. So if they sold it for the actual fair market value, then it would be good. Now, we have to consider my lav de l'achru. L'chura, wouldn't the mission be talking about a case, even if they didn't make the announcements? That was your question. So even if they didn't make the announcements, but they did end up selling it for fair market value, and the mission seems to be implying that that's okay. So what are you telling me, that if they sell without the achraza, then it's no good? The answer is no. The mission could be talking about where they did make the announcement. And the chiddush is, even they made the announcement, but it ended up selling for six more or six less than what it should sell for, then Michel and Bustle. Otherwise, how would we know that? The mission didn't say anything about Achraza. The Mishnah just said that if they did Shumar Dayan, Shekhsushus, Michel and Bustle, the mission didn't say anything about Achraza. So if we understand the Mishnah to be talking about, they did make the public announcement, and in the end, it wound up selling it for too much or too little relative to what was relative to the final bid, then Mishnah and Bottle. So that wouldn't tell us anything about a case where they sold without a chraza. Maybe the Mishnah could be implying that if they sold without a chraza, then no matter what, even if they sold it for fair market value, then it's no good, which would be what I meant to say. Why? So the last part of the Mishnah talks about the case where they made an announcement, the Igeret to be Kurdish, then necessarily the first part has to be talking about the not. The last part of the Mishnah says, if they made an announcement, then no matter what they sold it for, even if they did twice the price or half the price, then it's good. So obviously the previous case of the Mishnah has to be where there was no Achraza. So we would understand the Mishnah to be saying that if there was a hachraza, then we give them leeway up to 50%. If there was no hachraza, then we give them leeway only up to 20%. But less than 20%, it's still okay. Whereas a Meimer is saying that if there was no hachraza, then even if it's 0% difference, then it's no good. The answer is, you're right, you do have to say then that the first part of the Mishnah is talking about where you didn't make an announcement. There's a difference between things that are supposed to be. No, kan meaning the Mishnah versus the Meimar statement. So you have things that are supposed to be announced, and then you have things that are not supposed to be announced. You have, for example, when you're selling land, you're supposed to make the announcements for 30 or 60 days, but not necessarily all, well, certain, but actually, yeah. What are the things that you don't make an announcement on? If you sell a slave or metalfalin or shor. In many places in halacha, yes, slaves are considered like karka, but here, for a reason that we're going to talk about in a second, a sociological reason, then that. Anyway, so all those, when we say shtaris, by the way, what we mean is, for example, that there, Rashi says, so the Yisraelim have shtarichah, they're owed debts by other people, so they have notes, so they have notes for them. So these Yisraelim also themselves owe other people, so what they will do is they'll go and sell these notes, they'll go and sell the debt to somebody else to be able to collect it, and the money they raise from that they'll use to pay off the people who the Yisraelim owe currently. What we're saying for those kinds of things, you don't make public announcements. The reason with slaves is because if they hear that they're going to be sold, they may run away. So that's the difference. And in most places in halacha, yeah, we consider slaves like character. We actually learned from Pesach in the sixth parasha being called the Moisa. But practically speaking, with avodim, yeah. But on the other hand, land can't run away. Avodim can. So therefore, so that's the difference. And we don't want to make announcements about metalfalin or about shtaris because they might be stolen. After we make the announcement, somebody knows, hey, there's metalfalin or shtaris or whatever, the assignment being offered for sale, hey, that means they have them and go and steal them. So what would you say then when the Mishnah is talking about a case where they did sold and made a mistake of up to 1/6, and he said it's Mikra and Kaya. So we're saying that's a case where it's not something that's supposed to be announced. So therefore, fine, you give them the leeway up to 1/6. As opposed to a Maimar's case, it's talking about something that's thrown on land, which is supposed to be announced, there's no reason not to. Then if they didn't announce, then the whole thing is void, for whatever. Choices, by the way, ask the question. I mean, what are you talking about? Avodim, Shtaris, and Metalfalin. Since when can you take Metalfalin or Yisraelim to pay up any debt anyway? We've had a number of times already that only Kauka or Yisraelim is under a sheet. So Choices says, give an answer that, for example, you could have, let's say we're talking about basically selling them for the Ksuba, which I'll say, we said normally you're only Kauka for that, but suppose that while the husband was alive, he designated the metalfalin to be how the silver is being paid. Right. Then there is a sheet on them.
Right. They also said if there is no car and they stay, then we use the metalfalin. You said that previously.
Okay. Ordinarily there is going to be cows. And Tosa gives another possible answer. We talked about a couple of weeks ago a case where an Amona grabs metalfalin while the husband is still alive, and we said that she can use that afterwards. So there's that also. Also, before I should point out, there can be a case, for example, you know, because we said before Beis Din Aviyim Shor Yisraelim that Beis Din has to act as the father of the Yisraelim and always look after their best interest, you could have a case, for example, where the Yisraelim have karka, they have metalfalin, they owe a silver, or they owe a metalfalin, or whatever, and Beis Din finds that it's in the best interest to the Yisraelim rather than taking away the karka and selling it, better to take metalfalin in that value and sell them. Or another possibility, you could say there can also be a difference between the Mishnah and a Maimar statement. There can be, if we're talking about land, even with land, not always do you make an announcement, because there are times when you don't, when it's an emergency. Because now Nargoy said, we had this before, Lakaga, when it comes to raising money for taxes, Lemazoni, or Lemazonis, or the Amona, or Paso, and maybe of the daughters also, Lemazoda, or to bury the guy, or in all these cases also if they borrowed money, and now you're trying to pay back, Mizamni and Black Lazda. In all those cases, you sell without Akraza. So yes, the Mishnah would be talking about a case where you didn't make Akraza because of an emergency, therefore you give them leeway up to 1/6. Amenah is talking about a case. The normal case, we're supposed to do Akraza. The third possibility is you could be talking about the difference in geography. In some places, it's normal to make Akraza, and in some places, not. The Amr of Nachman, because, for example, we have Rav Nachman saying, "My Olam, what else can get us the Kurdish bin Harga?" They never wrote out a document of the Kurdish, a document of, like, we're going to make Akraza in Harga. They always just sold these things in private transactions. Now, Sovamina, so they thought to say the reason isn't Shumra B'Kli B'Shumra. The Chacham thought to say the reason must be because everybody now does. No, it's an expert on the value of land. They're all realtors. They all know how much things are worth. There's no reason for us. Nobody can bid up beyond the value of anything. But Yosef Amanyumi tells the Chachamim, no, the Yidimi Farshalem Limi Neger Yachman. Rav Nachman personally explained to me the reason is, Mishum Koralu Bnei Achim Nichsi Dachazda, because there's a sociological thing over there. In the Haga, what happens when you buy property, Rashi says, when you buy property that's being sold on behalf of your son to raise money for a chuva or a chod or what have you, Usually it would be why are they encouraged to sell it? Because whoever owed that money is pressing them for it. They're about to want the money as soon as possible. The Amar wants Ruksuba as soon as possible. And therefore they have to hurry up and sell it. So what happens, therefore, a lot of times then somebody ends up buying and being able to buy it cheap. As it always is when you're selling something, when you're trying to sell something as fast as possible, then you can get bargain. People in the Haragah. What?
The
Kari Mahu, so they call the people who buy such nechassim, they call them Bnei Achli Nichsi Dachrazda. They're people who eat to consume property that was sold at auction. Meaning, in other words, like they say, you know, like you took advantage, you took advantage of the assignment in order to pick up a bargain, basically. So because of that sociological fact that people didn't like people who did that kind of thing, therefore they sell it privately, and that way nobody knows that he bought it, and therefore there's not that social pressure against it. Some proportion of the Iri and others learn a little differently that the social pressure was actually against the Baal Chayv himself. What are you doing pressuring these Yisraelim to pay you? And therefore there was no need for an Akhrazah, there was no need for the Akhrazah, because anyway people would shame them and shun them into letting them go easy on him.
And therefore
there was no need for Akhrazah, because you could sell it you could wait and sell it at a more favorable time. The reason, by the way, has a somewhat different girsa in the last part that we had over here, about the difference between whether you're making a chrozer or not. He says like this: you have things that over here. Okay, he had made a distinction between things that are using a different gersa in the Gemara between things that are things that a hachloda is not supposed to be done on. Where there, even if based in makes a hachloda, it doesn't change things. Because it's not supposed to be a achrazah versus things where you could be making an achrazah, you could be not. That depends on whether they made an achrazah or not. So for example, in Nahuda, you could do it or you could not do it. So geography. So therefore, if they did it, then you have. Then if they did achrazah, then you have a mishnah. If they didn't do achrazah, you have a mishnah. As opposed to something where you're not, where there's no reason to make achrazah in the first place. For example, the avodim were powerful, and then we said, even if they chose to make achrazah, that doesn't give them the 16% anyway. I'm going to put it on Shmuel. Metalful and Choyusim, you shamanize them. When we have metalful and Choyusim, you figure out the value of them, and most of them are the and you tell them right away. You don't wait until they may increase in value, because meanwhile they may spoil. Rechista says in the name of Rahimi, no, what you do is you sell them in the marketplace. In other words, you wait until the next market day and sell them. And Vloitzli, it's not actually Vloitzli, it's Hadmirachshuka. One case is talking about where the market is close. Actually says close, meaning in time. That the next market day is coming up very soon. So yeah, wait a day or two, it's not going to spoil significantly in that amount of time. As opposed to if the next market day is a week away, then better sell it right away, even though you may get a lower price for it. Some other Rishonim learned that it means, if the Ritva, I think, says that it means in distance, if the shuk is close by versus further away. Okay, couple of cases. Rav Kahana had in his possession, he was taking care of some beer that belonged to Mishar Shibafukoi, who was a Yotzen. So he's the trustee on his behalf. Shaye at Rigla, he kept the beer and waited to sell it until the next Yom Tov. Omar, because he said, I forgot the Nafabe Isita, even though it's true that between now and then it might start turning, it might start tasting a little bit of vinegar. Nevertheless, Maisis was a Harifa, but if we wait until Yom Tov, everybody needs beer then. So therefore everybody will be willing to take cash on the barrel head, as opposed to if you sell it any other time, you might have to sell it on credit. So it is in the best interest of the assignment for me to wait. To wait. And also Mepharshim say the vote is when people need a lot of it, they'll even be willing to take some that tastes a little bit skunky or whatever, that tastes a little bit off, because you need it, you'll take whatever's available. So therefore there's no risk in waiting until the answer, because now. Another case, Ravina Avaviyade Chamra de Ravina Zuti. Ravina had in his possession wine that belongs to Ravina the younger, Yasma, who was a Yasim, Barak Zahava, who was also his nephew, the son of his sister. And by the way, this Ravina Zuti, some people say, we know in the Gemara there's two Ravinas. There's the Ravina that we have in most of Shas, or the Chavar of Rashi, and then you have a second Ravina who's considered to be the last of Amoraim. When he passed away, that's the end of the Tulkas Amoraim. That may be this Ravina Zuzi over here. So Ravina, the elder uncle, also had some wine of his own. And he was bringing his wine to Sichra. It's the name of a place. Also, a Kamei de Ravashi. So he comes to ask Ravashi, as long as I'm taking my wine there, should I also take my nephew's wine, the Yosef's wine? Or, because then it'll get a better price. On the other hand, maybe it's a risk to take it on the road. Can I take his wine with me? Tells him, go ahead. His is not any better than yours. In other words, the kind of reasonable risk that you would take with your own stuff, then yes, you can take the same risk with his as well. That's how Rashi learns it. The Rambam has a different understanding of it. The Rif and the Rambam have a different understanding based on a bit of a different girsa, that it's like what you do is like this. If there's no risk in keeping the wine over here, then no, don't take it to Sichra, even though you might get a better price for it over there, but don't take chances with it. If it's the kind of thing where there's risk either way, if you leave it over here and you can't find buyers for it easily enough, it may spoil, if you take it there, the boat may sink, whatever, then, since there's a risk no matter what, then just do whatever risk you would do with your own stuff. But don't put it to unnecessary risk. Even you could argue your own wine with under hate. You can take the risk. But the assignment's wine don't unless there's a corresponding risk just leaving it here. And that's how Lachas is passing in Shulchan Aruch. You have to be more careful with the assignments that are property than with your own, basically.
Absolutely.